Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. Always a joy to talk to Ron Coomer. Good morning, Ron. How's
morning,
life,
Ron.
Buddy?
Good morning, boys. How are you this morning?
Well, we're a little confounded, to be honest with you. I thought we had decided that this was going to be a sweep of a four-game series. I don't understand why the Cubs decided to drop the first game. It just doesn't make sense.
And who is we? The two of you? You didn't. Yes. I know you didn't ask me.
Yes.
Consensus. The consensus, Ron.
Yes. The people that watched the Padres go 5-20 the month of July. Those people.
Oh, those
and the people tiptoeing toward the ledge.
Yeah, last night was just one of those games. It was a dud, unfortunately, for the Cubs. You know, games like that when you have terrible travel and all of that, it's not an excuse, but it's just a pattern. And what happens, and it happens in all the sports, if you get off to a good start, Rizzo hits a line drive out. Bodie hits a ball that could have went out of the ballpark in like the third inning. He's out. If something good happens early, you get on a roll and the game goes well and everything's good, because Montgomery was dealing. When it doesn't, and you leave a team like that in the game and you've had bad travel, blah, 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 all the other things that go with it, it just, you keep them in the game and then they feel like they're right in it. And, you know, they ended up playing a good ball game last night, and they gave very good pitching last night also.
See, Ron, you said it. Montgomery was dealing. That was the impression I got, too. I was watching the game on the computer when I was at the Bears game. I think you saw the numbers. You saw the command. And Joe said after the game he wasn't that sharp, and that contributed to his decision to take him out when he did. What was your reaction when that happened, and did you see some of the same things that Joe saw?
Well, you did as his pitch count got higher, but I'm talking on early in the game. I thought his first three innings were right on the money, and that's where, when you look at the first three, that's where it's really good, and that's when you got to make hay as a ball club because of all the other things that were going on. At the end, he started walking guys and gave up some line drives, and the hits were piling up too, and that's the other thing. But he did his job to keep you in the game. He only gave up one run. But, you know, the other thing that kind of plays into it too, this is a situation with Montgomery where this is the most innings he's thrown in his big league career. So I also think they're a little leery of pitching him, you know, into that 100 pitches, unless they really have to. But I think there's a concern there too, David, with the innings he's thrown this year.
Mm-hmm. Ron, it was upsetting to get the news about Chris Bryant that this has now affected his rehab, that the injury it was bad enough that they had to kind of back off during rehab. That does not bode well in terms of when he's coming back. How do you take, you know, it's good news that Brandon Morrow can start a timeline, but it's bad news that Chris Bryant can't, and which one is worse or which one's better?
Well, I think, you know, they're separate situations, definitely. The Cubs could really use having Morrow back in their bullpen, and when they do, that's going to be outstanding, because with the new acquisitions, Kinsler, Chavez, I mean, you really have a solid bullpen now. I mean, you sent out Rosario, and he had a 1.3 or 1.4 ERA and he'd been outstanding for the Cubs. So to be able to make room, that's pretty good when you're sending guys like that out. So the Cubs really, really need Morrow to you know, anchor the bullpen. The Bryant thing is it's tough. It's a tough one. There's no doubt. You're missing an MVP player. You're missing a great base runner, a guy that hits in the middle of your lineup. He does so many things to help your club that this is one of those situations where, you know, David Bodie and Ian Happ really are going to have to pick it up. And Tommy La Stella is going to get a lot more playing time too if we don't score runs. It's just a tough one, and every team deals with it. And you just hope that some of these young guys can come through. But, you know, there's no other way to describe it. It's a hard situation, and Cubs are being, and so is KB, making sure that before he gets rolling and back on rehab, that he's pain-free, because you're probably just hurting that shoulder more if it's that sore.
Ron, how surprised were you at what Cole Hamels delivered in his first start because of how good it was? And how careful do Cubs fans have to be in not getting too carried away, because he isn't the same Cole Hamels that he was in 2008. He is in his 30s, and you don't think he's going to be that crisp every outing.
Well, David, I think he was a little pumped up. There's no doubt about it. Pitching your first game for a new ball club at the trade deadline, all those things, and the Cubs are first place team and the best record in the National League, all those things come into play. The surprising thing to me, though, was his pitch count got high. You know, you were closing in on 100 pitches, and he was still throwing 94 miles an hour. I guess I just didn't know he had that in the tank, and I started asking the next morning, you know, is that normal for him? And they said, yeah, he's 93 to 94, and if that's the case, that's outstanding for the Cubs. I thought he'd be more 90 to 92. But, boy, when you start getting up two or three more miles an hour, his changeup gets really even that much more effective. But, you know, Verlander did it last year, and they're different types of pitchers. But when you go from a last-place team and you get injected right into the pennant race on a team that's leading the league in wins, there's something to be said about that. It would not surprise me one bit just in seeing the way this guy handles himself if he has a really dominant last 2 months of the season.
Ron, we know the Cubs made some moves and added a couple of right-handed relievers, and you look at where they're at with the bullpen, and, you know, we got four lefties in the rotation, and yet you look at the bullpen, and boy, Brian Dunsing again yesterday, and I don't know, do you trust Justin Wilson at all? Very inconsistent. It just seems like it's a little surprise that the lefty-righty thing is so out of whack in terms of rotation to bullpen.
Yeah, I don't think Joe's overly concerned about being so dominant left-handed in the rotation. I do think if you do get Darvish back, then that eliminates the problem, because then you throw Montgomery back in the bullpen, and it kind of balances things out. So I think for right now, the best you got, and that's what you got to roll with. But I think when you look at the situation, if Darvish comes back, then that's going to eliminate that problem. And also, when you get to playoff baseball, Mikey, you're looking at a situation where three, maybe four starters,
right?
And that would push. I'm assuming that would probably push Montgomery back to the pen, just because of his track record of doing so well down there.
Ron, what's wrong with Jason Hayward? Last 2 weeks, has not been the same guy. Three extra base hits, 660 OPS. He just looks a little bit more tentative and different at the plate.
Now, I just saw some film on him, just the highlights of some of his swings last night. And, you know, I'm not exactly sure. I can tell you the mechanics of it, David. He just looks like he's pulling off the ball a little bit again. I saw some swings left on left. From yesterday's game, and everything was just coming off. It looked like he was trying to pull the ball or hit the ball down the right field line, and he's just got to stay in there a little longer. You know, everybody goes through these streaks where you get a little tired, or, you know, you may not even feel it, but you're just not quite crisp like you once were, and it is August. So hopefully he'll dial back into left center like he did when the streak started, when it started really good. And if he can do that, then he'll probably, you know, you'll see him do a little better.
You know, I think the Cubs are such a successful team that you're always going to get everyone's best shot. But it was interesting to hear, I think it was Hosmer who said something like, I love playing in this ballpark. I love the atmosphere. I love all, you know, you're going to get a team like that, as bad as they are, charged up over being in front of a crowd, over feeling the energy that exists in Wrigley, and maybe you're, as a result, you know, you're going to have to match that.
No doubt. Play in San Diego. those people go there and they're still sunbathing when they come to the game. I mean, there's no energy in San Diego like there is at Wrigley Field. So those guys come from San Diego and they walk out onto the field pregame, and all of a sudden there's 40,000 people and they're charged up ready for a ball game in a beautiful environment like Wrigley. And you leave these kind of teams in the ball game later, and they are, you know, they're Margot, he gets 3 or 4 hits yesterday. Dylan Ueva, he hits the ball well. You know, all these young guys are fired up and having great at-bats. And you just get the A game of everybody. You know, you see it here with the Cubs. I really saw it when I played in New York. When you played in Yankee Stadium, you know, it was an advantage and a disadvantage because some of the lesser teams came out there and they were ready to go. And I think that's the same thing you're seeing at Wrigley.
Ron, what did you make of the Brandon Kinsler kind of saga with him leaving Washington, and they decide to kind of stay in the race, and yet they get rid of a reliever that valuable, and then you find out in the Washington Post he was alleged to be one of the guys who was an anonymous source. He denies it. He talked about it. If you were his teammate, would you want to know more? Would you need to hear something from him to convince you?
No, I don't read too much into all that, David. To me, he's one of those guys. He's been a really good pitcher. He was the closer for Minnesota. He went over there. He did well. He's coming here. I don't know what happened in Washington, to be honest with you. And don't read too much into it. I worry about the Cubs. I know that the Minnesota Twins really liked him, and their manager is one of my buddies who I played with and hang out with, and he liked him and hated to see him go. So with that being said, that's the part that I see and what I don't know, you know, what's going on over there, to be quite honest, and don't really care. I worry about what happens right here in Chicago. Be a good teammate and let's win some games.
It was interesting because Theo was very adamant. It said that that Jeff Passan called him and told him that he wasn't the source that he used in that story. So Theo kind of rallied to his defense pretty vehemently. And I guess that's, you know, that's just something you don't want your name attached to. You don't want to be known as the leaker.
Right, absolutely. No player does.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's you know, you never, usually it's never a player. It's usually someone else. But with that being said, it is what it is. But this guy's got a pretty long track record in the big league. So
it's a great story, Ron. He's a great story. He came out of the independent
leagues. Right. I mean,
he was scooping ice cream when after an injury.
Right.
It's a great narrative.
Yeah, I agree. And a kid can pitch. I mean, I saw him in Minnesota. I've seen him in Washington. He's got a big arm, and he's going to help us. I really do. I don't read into too much of that stuff because, you know, teams and players and things, right now it's pretty toxic in Washington. I'll promise you that. If you don't think so, you're crazy. They're a really good team with a lot of talented players, and they've been right around 500 or below. That's toxic. So I would just let that one go and be glad we got another good pitcher in our bullpen.
What do you make of the Baez for MVP thing? I mean, is that a legitimate? I think the kid has had an unbelievable year, and you know, it was interesting to hear Wilson Contreras talk about his slide and that he's learning it from Javi Baez, and I see other guys around the league trying to copy that style, and we know, you know, he's the greatest tag artist in the history of the game. He's an unbelievable base runner. He's an electric player. But MVP is a different level.
It is a different level. But if you ask the other managers around the league, we saw it just in the last series, who are they intentionally walking? Javi. Mm. Who are they pitching around? Javi. Who's leading the league in RBI? Javi. He's gone from a 2D where you wondered if he was going to be a 250, 240, 270. Now he's a 300 hitter. You know, I just think he's bringing so much to the table right now. You have to give him consideration for MVP. You just do. He's playing in the middle infield and playing three different positions for Joe Maddon unselfishly and playing him as well as anybody else in the league is playing their position every day. It's pretty special what he's doing right now. It really is. If you were to ask the managers and the other players on the other teams if he should be in the talk of MVP, every single one would say yes.
Great stuff, Ron. You're the best. Always a joy to catch up with you, buddy.
Thanks, Ron.
Mikey, David, thank you. Have a good day, boys. It's Friday.
Yeah, that's a good day to have, I'll tell you that. And David, you must be exhausted there in Canton, Ohio, but you got big plans for
big
the night
ahead.
And the big weekend ahead.
Exhausted yet. Yeah. No, a lot of stuff going on down
but
over here.
But you're doing a hell of a lot of work, so that's good to see. And somebody has to in this program anyway. Let's do some work on traffic. Let's try to get ourselves going here.
Let's do it. Have a great weekend. It is heavy on the inbound Stevenson. Traffic sponsored by Campland RV. 48 minutes in from 355 to Lakeshore Drive. 37 heading in from the Tri-State. The Edens, you're fine. Kennedy, 30 in from O'Hare. 19 from Montrose. 15 Express. By the way, outbound, a crash at Nagel, and that is in the right lane. Heading over to the Eisenhower, 52, 390 in. 32 from Wolf. The Rhine holding at 28, 95th on in. As for the tollways, heavy eastbound Jane Addams, right around Rosetta. Crash off to the side. Also, northbound Veterans, a crash on the shoulder right at Maple, causing a delay as well. It's Campland RV's annual three-hour super sale. Visit the lot Sunday, August 5th from noon to 3 for huge savings on all RVs. A special preview starts at 10 a.m. Campland RV. RV buying made easy right off I-94 in Burns Harbor, Indiana. You're listening to 670 The Score, Chicago Sports Station.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, and we are delighted to welcome in the architect, Mr. Theo Epstein, joins us. Good morning, Theo. How are you?
Morning, Theo.
Morning, guys. How's it going? How's the football game?
It was as you would expect it to be, Theo.
Oh, I should have probably watched the football game instead of our game last night, I think.
Wow. There's a lot there. You know, I guess that team was 5-20, which is the worst they've been since their inaugural season in a month, and yet they – I thought it was interesting, Theo. Eric Hosmer said that, boy, it's so much fun to play in Wrigley. It's almost like the crowd got them excited. You know, they're not used to that sort of atmosphere. So you're always in the position you're in going to get everyone's best punch, right?
Yeah, I think it works both ways. I mean, we hear that a lot. Teams, no matter where they are in the standings, definitely get up to come play in Wrigley Field, but sometimes they get up to go out on Rush Street too, so maybe it helps us the next day. Who knows?
You know, Theo, you watched that last night, and it's frustrating for Cubs fans. I'm sure it was frustrating for you. The decision to take Mike Montgomery out when after he looked like he was in command, he walked a hitter, and I know the pitch count was a concern. Obviously Joe gets second-guessed every single day, and that's become a cottage industry in Chicago. But when you looked at that move – big picture, how important is it to, preserve him for the stretch run? And was that a factor? Is that a factor in every decision when it comes to Mike Montgomery?
It is. You know, he's obviously on a pace he hasn't been on before in the big leagues. So I think probably the bigger factor in Joe's decision was just matchups. You know, that's a lineup that has some hitters who are pretty dangerous against left-handed pitching. And he's seen them the third time through the order. And, you know, we got some guys, including Chavez, who've been lights out against right-handed hitters. And I just think it was a proactive move by Joe to try to get a little bit better matchups and in a one-run game and make sure that runner didn't score. And we just made, the wrong pitch at the wrong time, and it burned us. But you know what? When he makes proactive moves like that to get better matchups and it does work, and then we get out of the inning. No one's talking about it. You know, they're talking about something else in the game. So it's just the type of move you notice when it doesn't work out instead of when it does. But that's fine. You know, nine times out of 10, want to work for you.
And I don't think people are even that confused about why he took him out, and we all know the numbers and that. I think it was more, why did he bat him, right? I mean, why did he hit in the inning before? And that you guys are going through a little bit of a slump. And when we look at it, it wasn't about pitching yesterday. It was about hitting, right?
Yeah, we didn't swing the bats at all yesterday. All in all, that was, there are probably, 5 to 10 games a year you just kind of throw out and you don't want to think about it. It's not like football, right, where, you play one stinker and it's 1/16th of your season and you got to really dissect every single element of it and don't let it happen again. In baseball, it's going to be, the best teams lose 60 and 10 of those are going to be pretty ugly. And that was ours last night. We just didn't really show up. So it was kind of surprising coming off the nice win in Pittsburgh and Cole's debut. But it happens. And the great thing about baseball is you have to be back out there the next day, in this case about 16 hours later. So here we go.
Theo, how tricky was the decision to send Randy Rosario down? Brian Dunsing struggling a little bit. Justin Wilson a little bit inconsistent. And Rosario's there with a 1.97 ERA, 26 appearances. That could not have been easy. He did not take it well, according to what Joe said.
Yeah, I mean, I think he just showed the normal, normal passion that anyone would show in that situation. Randy's a great kid. He loves being part of this team, and he wants to be here. He's going to be here. I mean, it's not going to be a long absence at all, and we're going to need all our horses the rest of the way. But Dunsing's a guy we want to try to get right, and we'll see where that one goes.
It's interesting, Theo, because you mentioned Cole Hamels, and I think there's a lot of people that are really impressed with the amount of work you guys were able to do without getting into the major league roster. You've used a lot of assets over the years here, and you still were able to add to this team. Of course, the fact that you need to add to it is probably an issue of concern for some. I mean, you had some big moves in the offseason, and they're not kind of paying off at this point. How frustrating has that been for you?
Yeah, that's baseball. You just, you live with it. There's a lot of different outcomes that are possible with any transaction, with any decision, and you just have to be accountable for them and don't, you have to live in reality, right? You can't live in the world of your expectations or the world of projections of the world of scouting, of course. You have to live in reality, and if things aren't working out in a given year for one reason or another, you don't toss away the season. You make moves to try to stop the bleeding or try to improve the situation or try to bring in a new weapon. And if you have a team capable of winning the World Series, you have to live in reality and be proactive. And look, I think we felt, and I think the industry felt, and most observers felt, and the numbers felt, and the scouting reports felt, and the instincts felt like we had a loaded roster coming into the year. And so, you play the season out 1,000 times, you have all different kinds of outcomes around a bell curve. And on one extreme outcome, Darvish is throwing 200 dominant innings, and Chatwood's throwing strikes, the way, at least not walking guys, the way he has this year, throwing enough strikes like he has his whole career. And Bryant and Rizzo are having big years, and we're off on a crazy pace like 2016. And then on another extreme, everybody's hurt or everyone's having down years, and you're selling at the deadline. And we got somewhere in the middle, where some things have really gone well this year. Guys, Javi Baez has taken a huge step forward. Jason Hayward has had a bounce back year. David Bodie's come up and done a really nice job. Our bullpen has been on the whole outstanding, but other things haven't gone as well. So that's what you get. What makes it great is you don't play the game out on paper. You don't take sort of like an average projection. You get one of those 1,000 outcomes that you can simulate on your computer, and that's the reality, and that's the one that you live with. In this case, our outcome put a spot where come the trade deadline, we somehow, with everything that had gone wrong, still were clinging to the best record in baseball, but with a few obvious needs and a real low floor with our pitching the next couple of months. Like, if we didn't do anything, it had the possibility to really become a problem spot where we could have been in a really weak position going forward. So we wanted to try to really raise the floor on our pitching staff, both in the pen and in the rotation. And we wanted to do so without touching not only our big league team, but our many very, very interesting prospects that are developing in the minor leagues, especially at the lower levels. And I was proud that we were able to do that. I thought we got good value on all three of those deals, and we got good fits, kind of under the radar type moves. It wasn't like the obvious guy every time, but I think we fortified our staff and put ourselves in a better position in reality.
Theo, what's the appropriate level of concern for the injuries and the recovery of Chris Bryant and Brandon Morrow? Because those are guys that obviously don't need to tell you what they mean to the Cubs, and those are injuries that have lingered a little bit longer than maybe people expected.
Yeah, I think I think these are just injuries that you have to be patient with, but that there's not a huge level of concern. There's not an elevated level of concern behind the scenes because there's progress, there's stability, it's just and there is sort of behind the scenes timetables, but it's just, it requires patience. So, and everyone had a good day yesterday, you know, and these things kind of are day to day, but Moro threw and felt great. Probably wants to throw again today. We're not going to let him, but you know, once he starts throwing, as been the case in the past with him, he's on a pretty, you know, steady but gradual progression back to getting in games. So we'll certainly welcome him back and have him for the stretch run. Chris Bryant had a really good day with his strengthening yesterday. I know Joe said, you know, he feels it in a certain position, and that got everyone alarmed. But it's sort of extreme end of his range of motion where he feels it. The rest of it feels good. So they're continuing to strengthen and try to get him to a position where he never feels it. And he's making good progress too. And Darvish has had his best week in a long time and has a whole different look about him and is excited and can't wait to get off the mound in a sim game. So I think they're all trending the right way.
Do you believe that Darvish is going to throw significant pitches for the Cubs this year?
I do. Yeah, I feel that way. I'm a lot more confident about that now than I was 2 weeks ago. But, you know, you almost have to make trades, assuming guys don't come back. But the reality is we expect all those guys to come back and make an impact.
You know, Theo, I got a kick out of hearing that Jeff Passan called you to assure you that Brandon Kinsler was not the anonymous source and talking about a story. And I just got me wondering, you know, does that happen from time to time? Is that unusual for somebody to – I'm in the media. You know, a lot of Molly's in the media. To hear from somebody in the media to assure you of something, and when you get a call like that in this instance or in others, does it have an impact? Does it affect the way that you think about a player? Would it affect your decision making?
No, that was, I don't know if it was a first, but it was definitely unique. I can't remember ever getting a call like that, but I think you know, Jeff just felt like Graham was being unfairly singled out, so he just placed a quick call to let me know there was absolutely nothing to it. And it didn't change the way I looked at the player or anything, because our due diligence had told us he was a great teammate and that, you know, he wouldn't do such a thing as he was accused of. But I think it just, as soon as I got that call, I realized, oh, good, instead of being a 3-day story, it's going to require a lot of maintenance, and we're going to have to go out of our way to make sure this transition is a smooth one, not only in the clubhouse, but, you know, with the local media, the national media. We have to make sure this doesn't become a big story. As soon as I got that call, I just realized it was going to be about a, you know, 12-hour story and then go away as it should.
Did A-Rod call you, Theo?
I texted with him. Yeah, I told him what I felt about what he said, and he defended himself, but it didn't really resonate with me, but it is what it is. You know, look, I think from time to time, when you're dealing with national media, there's going to be guys who pop in who don't get the full picture of the way things are going, and that's a big platform, so it can become a big story if they get something a little bit wrong. And I think he thinks he's right, and we think he was wrong, and it's not the first time that's happened, but wish that hadn't happened. But actually think it might end up being a good thing in the long run. You guys didn't appreciate it, and they're really rallying around you. And he also went out and, you know, had a little bit extra determination perhaps in his next side session, threw great and is on his way. So he's the only environment that really matters for him is the one in the clubhouse with his 24 teammates, and that one's terrific. So what A-Rod did certainly didn't impact that, and if it did, it was in a positive way.
A-Rod is so polarizing, Theo. I think that was part of it, and the reaction was so negative. You know, but Rick Sutcliffe, yeah, who was a member of the family, he's been critical. He said similar things. How are they different?
You're never more sympathetic than when you're attacked by someone who's sort of, you know, polarizing to begin with. So, yeah, you know, I hate that happened, but it certainly could have been worse. And the teammates, our guys know who they care about, and that's in that little back and forth, it was definitely Darvish. So go from here.
How is it different than what Rick Sutcliffe said?
I don't know exactly what Rick Sutcliffe said. I do know that
I don't even know what Rick Sutcliffe said. I know he said something controversial, but I don't know. Ask Sut to explain what he was saying. I have no idea what he actually said.
I just was curious if it bothered you in the same way, only because it was similarly
critical.
I heard
he said something about not signing autographs, and all I can say is I've seen Darvish. I've been around Yu Darvish a lot more than Rick Sutcliffe has, and I've seen repeated acts of kindness to strangers, fans, kids, people he doesn't even know who have GoFundMes to get medical treatment. He's a very empathetic, kind person, period.
Hey, I saw him buy steak dinner for a bunch of Midwest League players in South Bend.
Yeah, there you go. All right, guys, I got to take my son to camp. I appreciate it.
Thank you,
Thanks
Theo.
For having me on.
Thanks, Theo. Guys.
Take care. Bye-bye. That is Theo Epstein. Interesting. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the Score. Interesting to hear Theo's reaction to the criticism that Yu Darvish received from A-Rod and the fact that the two of them were texting back and forth. And David, that was your initial reaction the morning after that happened. You said you felt, too, that it would end up being a good thing for Yu Darvish. And they
rallied around him.
Yeah, they sure did.
And it certainly resonated with Darvish. You know, there's always that sort of chip on your shoulder. I think people probably appreciate the fact that he's showing that side of him because they want to see that so badly. Everybody wants him to succeed. We don't really know the guy. So maybe something like this serves as a catalyst to get him going. It's hard to say, but they just need him to produce something.
It's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the Score. This hour's keyword is SCENE, S-C-E-N-E. Text SCENE, S-C-E-N-E, to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is SCENE, 72881, and one randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Very interesting. Theo didn't seem to, I guess he had a time constraint, but he didn't seem too thrilled to talk about that subject.
No, and I can understand that, but it was a question just about, A-Rod says the things he said about Darvish, it's understandable people would react. I mean, he's an outsider. He's a national media guy. When Rick Sutcliffe says it, it does put a little bit different, and Sutcliffe was every bit as critical. But it shows you what kind of season it's been for Darvish. Everybody's had an opinion on him, and they haven't, most of them have not been positive.
It shows you what kind of season it's been with Theo as well. I mean, it was very interesting to hear his answer to that question because you go into a season, you go out and you make a move which you think is a pretty good one with Chatwood. You think that the numbers reflect there's going to be a change in his splits because he's getting out of the thin air in Colorado, and that's going to mean that that the kind of away splits that he had, which they believed were pretty good, are going to be the norm for him. And then you double down and you go back into the market and you get yourself a guy like Yu Darvish in $126 million in 6 years. And now here we are, Brandon Morrow, who is obviously replacing Wade Wilson. You have a guy that you feel that is going to be your closer, and it was never an issue. And you got all this great pitching, and people are talking about the best staff the Cubs have assembled. And lo and behold, now you're at the trade deadline, and you're making moves, and you're trying to kind of reestablish a starting rotation that's gone from being the best ever to kind of letting you down.
But he didn't hesitate when he asked him if you expect Darvish to throw something,
yes,
a meaningful game. And,
yeah,
and that's the confidence you have to have. And that's encouraging because if he's able to put himself in that situation, even though it would likely be September before you find himself in that situation, that would be better than nothing. And if he's able to return in September or the end of August and pitch in games that matter – and help you in the postseason, then a lot of this will be, it won't be forgotten, but it'll just be filed away under the unfortunate start category because he can still help you if he stays healthy, and maybe this will be a positive dressed up as a negative.
312-644-6767. I'm sure this is going to be a topic of conversation throughout the day on The Score. We are going to bow out at this point for a moment. We'll be back with transition. We'll talk to the guys about some of the things Theo said. And, you know, a lot of people are saying that he sounded touchy. I didn't think that at all. I felt that that he responded to all those questions. I didn't think that it was over the top in any way. And, again, I think it's difficult. David is in Canton, Ohio, and we are talking to Theo on a cell phone, and it's there's
part
a
of him
of,
I couldn't hear, to be honest with you. Yes. Molly. At the end, there was part of him cutting out that right. I felt like I couldn't hear him, and I was wanting to make sure that I made clear what I was, you know, asking about Rick Sutcliffe, because to me there's a difference, and I was curious to what he had to say. So he might have been miffed. I hope that he wasn't.
Yeah.
We're trying to be respectful. He had places to go.
It's a lot like you, Darvish. There's things lost in translation. Let's put it that way. And we got transition next. He's David Haw. You're listening to Mully and Haw on The Score.
Thank you, Mully. That segment was brought to you by Subway. Show them your app and wet your whistle during Free Drinks Fridays. Just a heads up, 2 Subway restaurants every Friday, and show them your Subway app for your free 21-ounce drink. Limited time only at participating restaurants. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.